Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Let's go ahead and get our minutes approved from the last meeting. Representative Scott, would you like to move the approval of the minutes from the February 9th meeting?
I would love to move those minutes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting approval of the minutes from February 9th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Scott. All right, members, we have several bills on the agenda for today. I am hoping we can get through them all. If by any chance we can't, we'll push the ones over into tomorrow. We'll start it off the committee with that. But I think we can do that. And I'm going to go ahead and as a courtesy to the members presenting bills who do not serve on the Finance Committee, I will start with them. So I think I saw her come in, Representative Anderson. And so, members, we're first going to take up House File 602 in your packets. And I will move that House File 602 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. So we will have the bill before us, and that is the motion. And with that, Representative Anderson, welcome. And please feel free to provide your remarks on your bill when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, just to be very brief here, this takes the K-12 education tax credit and deduction and applies it to pre-K expenditures. We're seeing more and more pre-K facilities that are offering educational opportunities for kids and preparing them for kindergarten, and so this extends that credit and deduction to those expenses.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. So pretty straightforward proposal. Do you have any testifiers here for your bill?
I do not, Madam Chair.
All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 602? I'll say first four, or anyone wishes to testify with concerns. All right, not seeing anyone come forward. Any questions for Representative Anderson? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, do you have a fiscal note on what the estimated cost might be?
And I will ask Ms. Manzi from Nonpartisan Tax Staff if she'll come forward. She's with us again today for this. And Ms. Manzi, did you have a wish to comment on that?
Madam Chair, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department. Representative Murphy, I don't believe that the Department of Revenue has prepared an estimate for this bill as yet this session. They typically prioritize revenue estimates for bills that have hearings scheduled in the Tax Committee. I do have the estimate from a similar bill from 2 years ago, and that estimate was for $6.7 million per year.
And Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, do you think that's a fair estimate for this time?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? All right, seeing none. Representative Anderson, any final comments?
I just ask for your support, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. And we have seen this before. I believe we committee did move the bill similarly last session as well on the Tax Committee. So with that, I would renew my motion that House File 602 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Representative Anderson, your bill is on its way to the Tax Committee. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Manzi. And next, we will have Representative Erdahl, if he is ready. And let's see, Representative Erickson, would you like to move House File 574 to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes?
Madam Chair, I will move House File 574 to be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Well, so that is the motion, and the bill is before us. Welcome, Representative Erdahl. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a bill that
was in the tax committee that almost made it last spring, with only one minor change. Right now we did an amendment that clarified what a teacher was a little bit more. But let me just give a brief summary of a bill that I think I've been working on for 6 years now. 50% of our Minnesota teachers earn master's degrees. 92% of those 50% get their master's in their content area. And a study by the Center for American Progress found that teachers were more effective after earning a master's degree in their content area, particularly in math and science. I believe as a general principle, if you know more about what you're teaching, you should be a better teacher. So that's one reason for this bill, to try to maintain or elevate the quality of our teachers who are getting master's degrees. It's based on the Finnish model, where all teachers have to have a master's degree in what they teach. We chose regarding to do this in the core content areas. For secondary and for elementary, it's in one of the core areas that they teach, they get the master's, and not in the education or curriculum, which many of them do now. Another reason for this bill has to do with concurrent education. The Higher Learning Commission, as you may be aware, I'm sure you are aware, is talking about not allowing Minnesota credits to transfer or to in concurrent education, where we have teachers in the high school who are teaching for college classes. The students are earning college credit, but these teachers in the classrooms in concurrent education, for a large part in Minnesota, do not have master's degrees in what they are teaching, and this is now being we are being held to a higher standard now, and concurrent education in Minnesota, as it is presently structured, may not continue in the future if we don't have teachers getting master's degrees in what they teach. And so, in essence, that's what this is about. I do not have a fiscal note for this year, but the one that was done previously, 2 years ago, has about a $300,000 price tag.
All right. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I know a friend of mine got her master's recently, but her school reimbursed her for the classes she was taking. So in that scenario, obviously she wouldn't be eligible for the tax credit then, correct?
No, and that, Madam Chair, Representative Scott, that's I think highly unusual, particularly for a classroom teacher, unless the school board had some particular reason. As it does happen, but they would not, you couldn't double dip in this. You can get one credit for one master's. It's $2,500, which is roughly about a fourth the cost of a master's degree.
Other questions? Do you have a test? Oh, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, when you started, you said this was the first time this year, but there had been years before. What's happened to this after it's left this committee and you've traveled to other committees with it?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Murphy. You know, some of the others I don't recall. And except for the last one, where it, as I said, it is in the tax bill. It did pass off the floor. It would have become law, but we had that conjunction malfunction that spelled the end of the tax bill and my provision. So we came that close.
Okay. So it was,
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, so it was discussed in conference and accepted.
Yeah,
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I think we do have a testifier.
Madam Chair, these are all volunteers. I haven't requested anyone.
Very well.
Madam Chair and members, I'm
Matt
Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. Very quickly, we want to say that we strongly support 574. We support that for two reasons. Number one, I think school principals always are interested in the continuing development of their teachers with the education credits. More particularly with senior high school principals, everything that works towards the satisfaction of the HLC credentialing requirements in the college and the schools is helpful. As Representative Scott pointed out, some districts are able to pay for this, others aren't, but every incentive that we can do to see that the teachers get the appropriate credits that they need, as you all know, we have a waiver until 2022 to get those, which sounds like a long ways away, but that will be here quicker than you might think. I mean, this is, we think, part of an overall program to try to get those credentials for our teachers. So we strongly support this, Madam Chair, and recommend that you move it on to the Tax Committee. And we appreciate Representative Erdahl's work on this.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Any questions for Mr. Aronson or additional questions for Representative Erdahl? Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the finished model, how do elementary teachers receive a master's degree? In what area?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe that in Finland they can get it in education.
Just a master's in education.
Right.
Representative Erdahl.
That would, from my standpoint, in what I'm trying to do here, that would move away from the expertise that I would like to see, and also probably greatly increase the cost of the bill and make it even difficult for Chair Davids.
Representative Sandstead.
Madam Chair, I think that there's great merit to this. I'm concerned about your definition of core content areas as being limiting rather than benefiting all teachers and improving instruction for all students. My questions would be for you under this model, what would a vocational tech teacher do, an industrial tech teacher do? What would a FIED teacher do? I know many highly qualified instructors who have received their master's in curriculum and instruction, and it has really pushed them forward in their teaching and benefited their students greatly. But I think under this model, there's a large cell of teachers that are being overlooked. And I guess I'm wondering, how are you qualifying which ones are important, which ones aren't?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the points you're raising have not been points that I haven't deeply considered. The core content areas are those that are defined in federal and state statute. So they will cover most of our teachers. You are talking about specialty areas. I am not opposed to finding ways to do something. I have one more stop in taxes. If you or someone else wants to give me a list of content areas of specialists, I would certainly consider that. I think there are about 10 of them possible areas, and probably would not greatly increase the cost of the bill. Whereas if you went to elementary teachers and allowed that to be an education bill, it would probably, sink what I'm trying to do.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to have a conversation with you on this. As a teacher myself, I'm concerned about educating every child, the whole child, and we know that math and science and English and what you have kind of defined as the core content areas aren't the only areas that students succeed in. And anytime we can help teachers become better instructors, the students are the ones that benefit from that. So I would be happy to work with you on that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
And Representative, I'd be glad to do that if we can find a concrete way to put this together again, because I don't think this would greatly increase the cost. And by the way, I was a teacher for 35 years.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. other questions? Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? All right, seeing neither. Representative Erdahl, final comments.
Just to appreciate your support on this. I think it's a very needed piece of legislation for a lot of reasons. And I want to qualify that statement I just made where I said I was a teacher for 35 years. As former teachers know, we never stop teaching. Isn't that right, Representative Erickson?
Yes, I'm seeing
okay,
that.
Thank you.
I'm seeing that. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. With that, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 574 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Your bill's on its way to the Tax Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Representative Peterson. Members, next we're going to turn to Representative Peterson's bill, House File 719. On Minnesota Math Corps.
All
right. Welcome to your testifiers. And Representative Peterson, if you would like to start out by moving your bill, and the motion would be that it would be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or consideration or action at a later time.
So moved.
All right. So Representative Peterson moves House File 719 for be laid over for possible inclusion or action at a later time. With that, Representative Peterson, we look forward to hearing about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill you have before you, House File 719, is the Minnesota Math Corps bill. And Math Corps provides support for students in grades 4 through 8 and who struggle with math. And so it's patterned after the very successful Reading Corps math program, or its reading program, and is helping students reach that important benchmark of algebra proficiency by 8th grade. Math Corps tutors work in pairs of students 90 minutes a week, and each student is provided a personalized intervention, and their progress is monitored regularly with brief formative assessments that are done regularly, about every 4 to 6 lessons. So those unit assessments are the mile marker tutors who use to ensure they're on the correct road. In addition, there are benchmark assessments 5 times annually. Those are more detailed than when, like, planned stops on the journey to proficiency. The outcomes are clear. Students who receive Math Corps support increase their math skills by nearly 200% of comparable students. So today we have a few people here who are here to testify and know the Math Corps well. So I will let them start and start their testimony with your discretion, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Welcome. If you please just state your name for the record and then offer your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee. My name is David Parker. I'm the research director for CERB Minnesota, and it's an honor to be here to share the work that we're doing on behalf of Minnesota's students to help them have a stronger future in math. In my brief remarks, I want to cover the three main questions that are shown on the screen right now, but you have the slides, so I'll try to go through them quickly, and then you can have the slides as reference, or I'm happy to answer questions after. But the questions are basic. Why Math Corps? What is it? A little bit more to what was just mentioned. And then some more details on does it work? So I think the starting point for us is that we know that too few students are reaching proficiency. So we know in fourth grade, just last year, for example, only 69% of Minnesota's students were reaching proficiency. And that decreased by over 10% by eighth grade last year. And we also know that for students who have other risk factors, and in this slide here I'm just illustrating those students eligible for free and reduced price lunch, that gap between their percentages and overall is substantial. So we know that too few students are developing the math skills that we want. And so that's what Math Corps is being driven by. But we also know that those numbers have profound implications for schools and for organizations like ours who are committed to routing students back towards proficiency. And so we've used a little math to illustrate, and that's what's being shown here. If you just use that 31% who weren't proficient last year, and you start to consider an average, a typical school size of about 500, and the evidence base, so this is what works for actually moving students back towards proficiency in terms of time and resources that the schools need to find, you get some pretty staggering numbers. So you see some of those outputs there reflected in the slide. Hundreds of minutes of intervention time really need to be found to provide the students that extra support, and that translates to additional staff. And that's really what drives MathCore to partner with schools to support. And so what MathCore does is it's working to reroute students back towards, as was just mentioned, algebra success, because algebra is so empirically linked. Research has shown that when students have success in algebra, they have a gateway of future math and educational outcomes available to them. For example, if students can take 4 years of advanced math in high school, they're substantially more likely to graduate college. But backing up, in order to be able to take those 4 years of advanced math, they have to have that foundation in algebra. And that's really what is driving MathCore. So you see on the slide here, MathCore is laying the foundation in the years leading up to eighth grade, or whenever the students are taking their algebra, to lay that foundation to prepare them for that. The content and the details, as we already mentioned, we work in grades 4 through 8. When those foundational skills are being developed, we provide 90 minutes of tutoring per week to students in pairs with similar levels of needs. And everything that's done is directly linked to state standards and general standards that students need to have as well. And importantly for MathCore, as was mentioned, we're built on the same foundations as the Reading Core. And if you're familiar with that, or even if you're not, one of those foundations is the use of evidence-based practices. These are truly proven educational practices. And so what's shown in this slide is that those evidence-based procedures are targeting the development of foundational skills through a deeper conceptual understanding of math, through an ability to be more proficient when you're executing math, and having a set of skills to attack word problems, because we know word problems are represented more on tests and they're more a part of life. And that whole process, as was also mentioned, is driven by assessment data, technically sound data, and instructionally relevant data. And again, in its entirety, that's what's moving students towards that path that they need to be on for algebra success. In addition to that was the math kind of content, there's also some implementation-related content that MathCore brings to schools, and that is shown here depicting a multi-layered coaching model. So what you see here is that the tutors, these are AmeriCorps members. For those of you who don't know, AmeriCorps is like the domestic Peace Corps. These are folks who are giving a year of their life to serve their communities. And so Minnesota and MathCore and Reading Corps have figured out a way to help deploy that resource statewide for the critical issues of reading and math. But with that aside, it's that tutor giving a year of their life that's making the difference for the student, but the support for implementing that is what's shown in this slide. The schools have an employee who's trained in the model and is supporting that tutor throughout the year, doing formal things all the way up to the end of the school year. And then there's an additional expert in the program called the master coach who supports both that internal coach and the tutor. And that's what ensures that the data are collected and interpreted correctly, that interventions themselves are done as designed, and in general, the implementation is accurate. So I wanted to offer a pop quiz, but I'm actually kidding, because we're not yet to the point where we want to do math for fun, I think, in society, but we're working to change that. So instead, this is about illustrating what our students can do. So if you're like me and you're like the rest of us kind of thinking about this, you see this problem here, and you want to find the least common multiple, and then you want to start doing some addition and some multiplication, and perhaps you're thinking, if I had a pen and paper, I would get it right. But our MathCore students can look at something like this and do it in seconds. And that's because of the work that's gone into developing a conceptual understanding and their quick computational skills. The answer, by the way, is 3/6 is 1/2. As I think is readily apparent. 5/8 is 1/8 more than 4/8, which is also 1/2. to hazard a home is one they've left open. So when you have, when you've worked with the manipulatives and you've seen kind of what's underlying factions, hey, did some people get it? Good. Then you can do that more readily than the laborious process that I went through the first time we saw this. But the reason we shared that is because that's just an example, and we want to see that transferred into the general math skills, of course, that students are developing. And what's shown here is, as reference, the students, we were able to look at our growth of students last year, all students who were at risk or would benefit, some of whom were able to receive the math score and some of whom weren't. And this is where that up to 200% the rate of growth happened for the math score. And this is an additional data point for each of our grades showing that what that added growth translated to was more students reaching a target for growth that was putting them back on a grade level trajectory. So that's what's shown here. The percentage of math course students was substantially greater in terms of meeting that target for growth. We were obviously very excited to see that. But that wasn't the only survey data we were able to collect last year. We also surveyed our students directly. And I just want to highlight what's at the end, what's in the box here. This is about student attitudes, and we know how important student attitudes towards math are. It helps them lean in and engage in math. And what we found is that over 90% of the students reported, yes, that adult that's working with, that tutor, believes they can succeed specifically in math. And even more importantly, over 80% took that back into the classroom. So they went into the classroom and they reported they're enjoying participating in class more than they were previously. So those two results are really exciting for us, and that's exactly what we want to see, again, routing students back towards a path of math success. And if they don't have access to those additional supports, it's much less likely that they can get back on that path. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Mike McCullough. I'm the principal at Washington Technology Magnet School. Some of you have had the opportunity to visit us there, and certainly for the others, welcome you to visit us anytime, and certainly welcome you to our neighborhood. You're actually in the Washington Technology Magnet attendance area, so welcome to St. Paul and Washington neighborhood. And I'm here to talk a little bit about our work with the Minnesota Math Corps over the last 10 years. You've seen the statistics that they've come up with, and I can tell you in real life, it's as good as they say, if not better, and I'll tell you why. We all know that math is an increasingly important in the 21st century skills and careers. Things like going to college, tech ed, military careers, math is more and more important every year. Washington has over 2,100 great kids in grades 6 through 12. We're the largest secondary school in either Minneapolis or St. Paul. We have over 1,000 second language learners, 90% of our students receive free or reduced price lunch, 90% are students of color, and our graduation rate is just over 90%. So we have a lot of great things happening and a lot of hard work from the staff that work at Washington. A lot of people, students as well as adults, and I saw some of you wincing when you put that slide up on the screen there, struggle with math. And more so than like reading, you won't hear people say, well, I don't like to read, or I have difficulty reading, or especially students and parents, whereas you have a lot of students or parents that say, I have difficulty with math, especially in high school when they start bringing home books that say algebra or geometry or trigonometry on the cover. A lot of parents feel uncomfortable helping their students, so it's imperative for us to get the students ready in grades 4 through 8 through programs such as Minnesota Math Corps. So how great would it be if there was a program where you had a tutor that could work with a student up to 90 minutes a week and to tutor them on the skills, the exact skills they needed in math right within the school day. It'd be perfect, which it is with Minnesota Math Corps. At Washington, our students earned over 1,300 college credits last year through programs that you know, like Advanced Placement, College in the School, Project Lead the Way, Concurrent Enrollment, programs that we love and are doing a great job of getting our students ready for that next level. But what are we doing to get the average kids ready for those high-intensity programs? Math Corps is a program like that. We're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars this year in special education and remedial programs. We're going to spend millions of dollars in programs like CIS and things like that that are for the high-flying kids. But what are we doing for kids that are in the middle? And that's what Math Corps is. It's helping those kids in the academic middle, give them that little extra push it takes to help them be academically successful and ready for rigorous college classes. So how does it work? Minnesota Math Corps works with us to recruit and train great tutors. Many of them, most of them are college graduates. Some of them are looking at a career in education. They have a college degree and they want to give back to the community. They have a research-based curriculum, technology-based curriculum. At Washington, we have 4 full-time tutors that do a great job working with our students. So we at Washington identify students that are partially proficient in math. They're just, again, on that bubble. They need a little extra help to push them over that proficiency level. They're not the kids that struggle and struggle the most or the kids that are the high flyers and kind of get it that first time. They're that kid in the academic middle. We want to help prepare them to be ready to take rigorous high school and college courses. The tutor, most importantly, builds a relationship with the student so that they want to go to math tutoring, even if it means missing part of another class. And if you've got kids that want to go to math tutoring, I mean, this is like a win-win-win. This is like a dream come true. It's critical for our students to be successful in algebra and to be successful in higher math and be ready for college. The tutors are meeting with 1 to 2 students at a time, and they can provide that relationship in combination with that research-based curriculum in order to help the students be successful. And as Dr. Parker mentioned, the evidence of success is there. Seeing students have twice the expected growth during a school year, again, as a school principal, is amazing. And again, the more programs like this we could add, the better it would be. Also, as an unintended consequence, many of these tutors decide to go into education. So we're getting tutors that are looking at kind of that next generation. We talk about teacher shortage, especially in math and science. We're giving them an opportunity to work with kids for a school year and see if that's something that they really like. And we've had several tutors that are either in school now, in college now, or have gone back and become teachers. So again, thank you for your consideration of this bill. It's definitely a worthwhile program.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Dr. McCullough and Dr. Parker. We have one more testifier. Welcome, and please just state your name before you provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Audrey Sucker, and I serve as the CEO of Serve Minnesota. We're responsible for Minnesota State AmeriCorps programs, and we're very grateful to have the opportunity to be with you today to ask for your support for House File 719, which would expand our Math Corps program. I also want to take this opportunity to thank and recognize Representative Anselmo, who's recently been appointed to serve on our board of directors. Thank you. I only want to emphasize 3 quick points in addition to what you've already heard. First, the Math Corps was developed at the request of school districts. St. Cloud was the first district. They were witnessing what was happening for their students through the work of the Reading Corps and asked us if we couldn't design something that would help students that were struggling with math. So now, since 2007, we've expanded to a total of 79 districts across the state, from Austin in the southern part of the state to Net Lake in the north. And now in our survey data, 91% of our school principals echo what you just heard from Dr. McCullough, and they agree that the Math Corps supports their schools in implementing a rigorous system of math interventions and assessments. Second, as we've been doing this work, we haven't come across any other community-based math tutoring program. And what we think the reason for that is that while schools need help from the community, designing the training and the data collection and the support necessary to be successful is complex. We've taken the time to convene math experts to write our own interventions that align with the foundational math skills that students need. So now, with the service of our AmeriCorps members, we have in place a scalable model and a model that we are very eager to scale. And the third and final point I want to make is just to reinforce that we have a continuous focus on innovation. Over the next 2 years, we plan to build out our interventions to serve students from pre-K to third grade, in addition from fourth to eighth grade. And we also are going to formalize and design extracurricular activities that will help expose STEM students to STEM careers. So to conclude, I just want to say that we have a huge sense of urgency around this issue. I think, as many as you know, the data tells us now that right now less than 1% of the high school graduates that have the advanced math skills that they need for STEM careers are, in fact, students of low income. And we really feel a sense of responsibility to help turn that around. House File 719 would allow us to quadruple the number of students benefiting from the Math Corps from the 2,300 that we project to serve this year to over 9,200 next year, which we feel is a huge step in the right direction. But thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. We do have a few questions. Representative Mariani.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Peterson, for bringing us this bill. I'm a big supporter of both the Reading and the Math Corps efforts here. I was part of the initial bills way back when Chair Segrin, Representative Segrin, authored the, I think it was the first Reading Corps investment. It's always been a good, strong bipartisan support. And thank you, Dr. McCullough. I'd be remiss without acknowledging one of my St. Paul school principals. And Madam Chair, you and I had a very good visit there a few years ago. I think Representative Erickson joined us as well.
Yep.
Very impressive work that you're doing there. Thank you so much. A couple of very quick questions, and perhaps that's for Ms. Zucker and Dr. Parker. What is the impact of this type of effort relative to the gaps that we have, the racial disparities, gaps in outcomes? Obviously, Dr. McCullough's school is pretty heavily, students of color, very diverse. What kind of impact are we seeing kind of in the macro, and you know, what's the promising effect of that relative to closing gaps? And what about, is there anything that we're learning as you're delivering this community-based tutoring work that then translates over into practices of schools, policies, perhaps at the department, et cetera? So what are we learning, and are we applying what we're learning on the field in our regular classroom instruction efforts?
Dr. Parker?
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the questions, and I'll take a stab at a couple of them. As I mentioned, the model of Math Corps is built very, very much on the Reading Corps model, and we actually have some results that I'll share from that show just what you're looking for, I think, about closing the achievement gap. When you provide evidence-based interventions across the board where students need them, it helps the students who are in most need close their gaps. But we're also very interested in taking a more macro approach to this. So we have funding from the Brady Education Foundation to examine the impact of the program. And a requirement to get that funding was that we exclusively evaluated the program in sites that had a greater than 50% free and reduced price lunch rate. We just collected those data last week for the post-test. So we're very much looking forward to seeing that impact on sites that serve students that largely constitute the achievement gap.
Ms. Zucker?
Madam Chair, Committee, and Representative Mariani, I think you also asked about whether or not we were seeing changes in practices in the schools. And one of the motivations from Alice Segrin when she initially started the Reading Corps was that we would help schools have access to data to use data to inform instruction. So we are clearly seeing that happening with the Reading Corps and also with math. We do survey our administrators and ask them if this is helping them have the kind of data that they want to inform instruction. So I would say that that is occurring. And I think over time we'll be able to report more on and more deeper systems change to the point of your question.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, just one other quick question. And so we know about the Washington Magnet or Technology Magnet in St. Paul. This is a statewide program. I take it the delivery system is through our schools. So I'm just looking for affirmation of that. So where is this program present? Is it present uniformly throughout the state? Is it present only in public schools? Is it present in charter schools? Is it present in private schools, et cetera?
Ms. Zucker, or Dr.
Sorry to switch things up. Madam Chair, Representative. Generally, there's an application process for the program, and schools, public schools, charter schools across the state that I know of are all currently accessing the resource. I think we're in about an equal split, and I think we're in about 100 schools right now across the state.
Ms. Zucker.
Representative Mariani and Madam Chair, we'd be happy to follow up with all the details because we have detailed site lists. I just don't have them right in front of me. But it's about an equal metro greater Minnesota split. And the beauty of it is that any school in any corner of the state can apply to have the math court.
And Madam Chair, I didn't hear private schools. Do private schools participate?
Ms. Zucker.
Madam Chair, we don't currently have any private schools participating. We do have charters, though, however.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you.
All right. And Representative Thiessen, I'll put you on the list. Representative Murphy's next. But before we go to Representative Murphy, just a quick question to follow up on that line of inquiry from Representative Mariani. So you said about 100 schools. I'm wondering, do you have a waiting list of schools? And also, is the demand such that you need more to get more tutors in the program to fulfill demand from schools for math core?
And Chair, committee members, we do have more demand for tutors than we're able to fill, which is one of the reasons that we are excited about having this bill in front of you. And we know that the demand is going to continue to exceed our capacity to deliver it.
And do you have any estimate on I think it's $2 million each year of biennium is proposed in this House file, how many more schools you could add given that appropriation?
What we know is that we could quadruple the number of students that will be served, and then the number of schools we add depends on the amount of need the school has. So for every 20 children that need the support, we need to place one tutor.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, I'm excited about your program and that you're bringing this to us, and I feel that there's a great need for that. And when Dr. McCullough talked, I thought maybe he was talking about me when you know, the algebra book, the geometry book, that kind of thing, because that's kind of when the last time I had math. But I've been thinking, and if this program is so good, could some parents be, through community education programs, be brought up to where they're supposed to be as adults, and then through the community ed program where they're taught, like the math core people or the people that are doing the teaching, the tutoring, the AmeriCorps people, could they be given the lessons, could the parents be given the lessons that the AmeriCorps people, and we could build in a recycling program in the community to reach all levels of children through the community ed programs.
Ms. Zucker.
Committee Chair, Representative Murphy, we love creative thinking and creative ideas. So we also are always thinking about how we can engage families more effectively. So I think to the extent that there were adults in community ed that wanted to be AmeriCorps tutors, kind of follow your line of thinking. I think the point I'd like to make is we always want to be creative. Right this minute, I can't make the link between community ed and AmeriCorps service, but it's probably there.
Just from my own, Madam Chair, and Ms. Zucker, just from my own experience, every time I get the community ed folder with what offerings they're given, I look for eighth grade math. Thinking, or some kind of math. Thinking, I could take a community ed class in math and get up to speed better than I am at this time. Because it took me a little while to get the answer that you gave. I had the first half figured out, but not quite that one remaining thing. But nevertheless, I just need one more answer to my question about the children that are in this program. From what the three presentations were, I've gathered that they're still in a regular math class, and then they're taken, in addition, 90 minutes during the week with the tutors. Where does that student get the 90 minutes from?
Dr. Parker.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, that is the omnipresent educational question, and schools take that time, they find that time in multiple ways. And it depends a little bit on whether or not they're in an elementary setting or they're in a middle school setting. Some schools typically structure to find that time. Other schools have general, with the initiatives for response to intervention or multi-tier systems of support, which bake in intervention time, they've allocated time for intervention throughout their day, and then that time is used for the students who are here. But perhaps Dr. McCullough wants to...
I sure would like to hear from him.
Speak from direct experience.
Where does he find those 90 minutes for those students?
Dr. McCullough.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, and you're always welcome to take 8th grade math at Washington. I know you're in the neighborhood. You can stop by, and we'll get you right in there. We've got some great teachers. I think you'd love it. But I know if the chair excuses you at any time, you can always come up to Washington. But
I'm a note, Representative Murphy.
I'm the 90 minutes. And, again, it depends on the individual student. Sometimes it'll be like out of a homeroom or a foundations class, and I think some of the members have heard me sing the praises of extended day, right? So extended day, that's one opportunity during the extended day. But you're correct. We are providing it in addition to the regular math class, because just like our work with other students, whether it's special education or second language learners, we want students to be exposed to the grade level standards. We can't just have them be taking some kind of remedial class down the hall with non-licensed teachers. They have to have the regular licensed teacher teaching the class, but then this is in addition to that. That makes sense?
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Dr. McCullough, I didn't quite get, though. Give me an example of three children.
Okay, so...
Where the 90 minutes come from.
Sure. And again, not to get too deep into the weeds, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, but at Washington we have an alternating block schedule, great schedule, by the way, it's the best schedule there is. So we have 80 minutes periods, right, and the students meet every other day in those periods. So there's five 80-minute periods a day, right? So, like, in one student might take, like 30 minutes in three times they might get out of like a FIED class 30 minutes early, right, so one student. Another student might be out of their foundations class or their kind of their homeroom, like if you went to homeroom back in the day, instead of going to homeroom, they might go to Minnesota Math Corps. And then another student, because again, we have an extended day program, right, largest extended day program in the state of Minnesota, 2,100 students from the first day of school till the last day of school. Because, again, we have a lot of kids that are interested in learning or having enrichment experiences, things like that. We're able to take it out of that extended day. So, like most students in St. Paul, the secondary day ends at 2. At Washington, all of our students go to school till 3. And so some of those students are taking Lego robotics. Some of them are taking Hmong dance, Korean dance, Taekwondo, archery. And some of them, we get those extra 30 minutes of math core every day.
Representative Murphy.
I'm okay with most of the examples he gave except for that missing 30 minutes of the FIED class.
And again,
Dr. McCullough.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy. Again, because we've got the longer periods, we're able to make that work. Right? We've got 80-minute periods during the day, and so we're able to pull the 30 minutes out. And again, it depends on what the student's needs are.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first question I have is on the application process. What are you looking at when you rule someone in or rule someone out?
Dr. Parker.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, we have a standardized process that goes out to schools, and they fill out a number of questions and tell us the information about the school. We're particularly interested in their need, so we'll look at the previous year's MCA proficiency scores, and and make a decision with them. And oftentimes we do make a joint decision with the school. We have a large staff of folks who work specifically for reading and math that help the schools determine that it's a right fit. But as Ms. Suker mentioned, for the last many years, we've had greater demand than we can supply. So we engage in that process with the sites.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Well, that was my question. So really the main thing, Madam Chair, is if they have a large number of kids that are performing below proficiency.
Dr. Parker.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, need is a very important consideration.
And Madam Chair, just two other questions. First, are there other constraints than money, like the number of volunteers you have, AmeriCorps people that you have? I mean, do you have enough MathCorps people, or are there constraints around that? Tutors, thanks.
Ms. Suker.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen. Clearly, recruiting MathCorps tutors is something that we pay attention to day in and day out. We have a recruitment team that focuses on that year-round. And so far, we've been able to, this year has been a bit of an anomaly, so we haven't recruited every tutor that we want to ideally, but we're close. And next year, we've listened to what tutors are telling us in terms of their willingness to serve, and we've created more part-time opportunities to make it even more attractive to more individuals. But we have no worries that there's enough college students out there and enough baby boomers that we just need to reach them. And that's a part of our responsibility to make sure that we are recruiting successfully.
Representative Thiessen.
And just one last question, Madam Chair. So some of this is funded through AmeriCorps. I mean, the volunteers get incentives through AmeriCorps to do this tutoring. Is there, where is that at the federal level now with changes at the federal level?
Committee Chair, Representative Thiessen. Right now at the federal level with the change in the administration, there's not yet clear, there's not a new CEO for our federal agency. However, because what we are doing is really part of the jobs world, we're very optimistic, and we're also cognizant that this kind of work over the whole lifetime since it was born in the early 90s has had bipartisan support. So while we don't yet know what it will exactly look like, we're optimistic and confident.
Representative Thiessen.
That's it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Parker, is it possible that we could use these tutors at the high school level if we reach a fiscal level to accommodate more than our elementary and middle school ages? Because I see this also as invaluable to our high school students. Our elementary, our middle schoolers, I think, have really learned to love math because our math standards in Minnesota provide a lot of innovation. And that's why you could do that clever little problem solving up there, because they're learning from a different perspective, and so they're way ahead of us in thought. But it would be so valuable for our high school students as well, as we look at careers, that the STEM careers, for example, whether it's technology, it's a technical area like medicine, there's so much math needed. So could you comment on that? Dr. Parker.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think I would just comment that we absolutely agree. That foundational set of skills is critical across the grades, and we've had a chance to meet with other organizations interested in this space, and they have reminded us the power of this for the trades that may not require a four-year typical institute college degree, but the math load is rather considerable. So readiness for success in those careers would be something that really could be supported through this.
And Representative Erickson. Thank you, Manager. One last question. So is there longitudinal data available through the department that might separate out those who receive math course, assistance from those who do not? Are we able to look at that for analysis of the effectiveness of this program?
Dr. Parker.
Madam Chair, Representative, we're just in the process of building that just now. This program has existed in this current state just now in its second year. It was in an early iteration 3 years ago, but before that it was a completely different program that we're building both data sharing agreements with the state and also a longitudinal infrastructure.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. I have a question for you. You mentioned in the first part of your presentation that you there's someone on site designated that works with your tutors and with the Math Corps people that come in, and you developed your own curriculum, so your own sort of methodology and strategies that you use in working with the students. I was at a demonstration presentation on Reading Corps, and one of the things that struck me in talking with the volunteers, AmeriCorps people working on it, they were actually both teachers had been through teacher preparation programs and said that the things that they had learned and the strategies in Reading Corps were things they hadn't learned in their teacher prep programs but were so effective and wonderful in working with students. So do you extend your services in terms of just working with maybe teachers or curriculum experts and specialists at the schools to share sort of the strategies that you use, even if the school doesn't have Math Corps tutors in it?
Madam Chair, Committee, I think that as Ms. Suker shared, that person in the role of the employee who is trained in the model and supporting the model, our data have consistently shown that they're recognizing that value, and we certainly promote their sharing of the skills that they have, but also how the tutors could be modeling and using the strategies. And I just want to note that we're able to do that because we've built this innovation support wing in CERB Minnesota, and we're learning that it's kind of accelerating the research to practice gap. So where teachers might not yet be getting it through the traditional models, they're able to access it through this kind of, we can identify it, we can put it in the hands of our tutors and our coaches within just a couple years. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm always struck by, there's just really incredible, innovative, wonderful things going on, but it's a matter of disseminating that information and having access to all of our schools and our teachers and staff to know what other tools are out there. So I'm really excited about this idea too. I think it's great, and we need to expand it. Representative Marianne.
Sure, just very quickly on that point, that was kind of what I was trying weakly to get at with my questions earlier, but I concur. And it seems to me that, first of all, I think this is a great investment. I do. And I hope that we will continue to invest in this effort. But it also, Representative Peterson, might be good for us to think about ways in which we build language into these bills that expect something back to us relative to this point. I don't know quite what that is. I don't want to micromanage, you know, the program at all. But I think setting up some kind of expectation, you know, investing the public taxpayers' resources in this, that brings back information for us that perhaps establishes, I don't know, just some kind of outcomes relative to this point of how do we enhance the field of teaching and instruction and direction of our management of our schools informed by these practices might be a good policy direction for us to push. So just putting that out as a thought to consider, and maybe we can creatively come up with some workable language on that. So anyway, thanks for that inquiry.
Thank you. Well, good suggestion. And I would, just on that, do you issue any kind of a annual report on Math Corps and where you are and the results in the schools where your tutors are?
Madam Chair, Representatives, yes, each year we do produce an annual report. You can find it on our website through CERB Minnesota Math Corps.
Thank you. All right, any other questions? Anyone else who wishes to testify? All right, Representative Peterson, final words.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I think that what's exciting about this program is that it works. And the secret sauce is in the mentoring and the coaching model that this program provides. And I appreciate the comments from Representative Mariani and others about how we can maybe get some more data, but more importantly, how can we prepare our teachers maybe to look at this type of model too? But really it comes through the support model that exists, and by supporting this bill, we can expand this to even more school districts across the state, and that's why we're really excited about it. And remember that this program works for all students, students of color, ELL, low-income kids, and then those kids that are just pretty much in between. And that's what's so exciting about it. So with that, Madam Chair and members, I ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Peterson. And with that, she renews her motion, and House Bill 719 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And next, we will turn to House Bill 646, Representative Bennett. So returning from math core to reading core. All right, and Representative Bennett will move that House File 646 be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill or for further action. And with that, welcome, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So moved. And thank you, committee members, for being willing to listen to this wonderful program. First of all, I'd love to just say, after the wonderful job that Representative Peterson and the Math Corps people did, I could just say ditto for Reading Corps. But I won't, because I want you all to hear about this wonderful program. As many of you know, I'm a recently retired elementary school teacher, and I had the privilege of teaching first grade for many years. And for a number of those years, we had Reading Corps in my school. So I have witnessed the evidence of this program personally right down at the ground level as a teacher. And it is a very successful program, so I was excited to be able to support this 2 years ago, and I continue to be excited about it. Minnesota Reading Corps works with children ages 3 to grade 3 who are identified as needing additional support to become proficient readers. And trained AmeriCorps literacy tutors work with students one-on-one or in small group. They provide individualized instruction. And I want to add a couple things that I could just say from witnessing this program. Number one, about a year ago, I was able to attend their kickoff event for Reading and Math Corps and be part of their pledge. I kind of wanted to call it a swearing-in ceremony like we have. But I was amazed because they asked me if I would come and help lead this pledge. And I was picturing a room maybe twice the size of this room filled with people. And when I got there, what was that, the Minneapolis Convention Center? This huge arena with a sea of red jackets and some of the blue jackets of Math Corps as well, with all these tutors, some of them local people from my area. So the excitement that they all had for this program and basically being volunteers and inputting into a young person's life was really fun to see. The other thing I love about this program is that it's data-driven, and they use evidence-based procedures. And I think that's really important for anything we do in education. Really, anything we do in government should be data-driven and evidence-based, like we do in our schools. So the program is just high quality, and it's proven to close the achievement gap. So I'm going to quit talking now and let the professionals here talk about it, but I will introduce again Dr. David Parker and go for it.
Welcome.
Madam Committee Chair, my name is David Parker, and it's good to be right here still to share with you now this time on the work that we're doing to help our students in reading. I do want to just note that, as I think have been acknowledged a couple times, the theory of change underlying what we're doing in Reading and Math Corps is pretty similar. And so you'll see some common elements in what these slides show and what we just talked about. But the things I would highlight are that we recognize the value of helping the schools by providing them a resource to help towards improving reading and math outcomes. That's one core piece. Another core piece is that we use proven educational practices. So we're helping bring those practices to the schools because they would be looking for them, and we know that's what works. And then lastly, we have that dedicated coaching and support structure. So you'll see some of that, and where it's redundant, I'll make sure that we go through it rather quickly.
But just like in math, there's some basic questions. But Reading Core, as has been acknowledged, has been around a little longer. And so we have some additional things, I think, that we can share, specifically some data about adding value to the state of Minnesota, specifically with proficiency outcomes, and then what we're doing to continue to make it stronger, to innovate the programs. But I think we're aware of the goal for Reading Core is to build those foundational early literacy skills so that students are maximally likely to be third grade proficient. That's really what we're seeking to do, get them on that path. Over the last 10-plus years, the program has had statewide reach, as shown here on this slide. We're all the way up in Roseau. We're down in Rochester and even south of that, where I'm from. And that same drive in terms of need, and what early intervention and how to do early intervention correctly would imply is what's behind our work in Reading. So we know just last year 43% of third grade students were not proficient. That's a little bit greater than that number I shared for math. And that has an even bigger implication on the amount of time and kind of resources that schools would need to meet that. And so again, this creates the space for organizations like Reading Core to support schools. And has been noted, this idea is not our own. We actually have former legislator Alice Siegman, former commissioner of education, to thank. She was the one that recognized that this AmeriCorps idea, people that are giving a year of their lives to support their communities, they could give that year of their lives to support schools and be trained and supported to do what's proven in education. So when we see education science on this slide, we're talking not about biology or chemistry. This is about what we know for teaching reading, what we know for works that works for teaching students and helping them improve their outcomes. So before I talk about outcomes, and I do want to focus on the outcomes, or at least provide those to you, just a quick bit of detail about the Reading Core program. There are two broad branches, one in pre-K, and in the pre-K setting, that AmeriCorps person is fully embedded into the classroom. And so they're supporting literacy, broadly speaking. You'll see them doing rhyming and alliteration activities that are important for students to be working on as they arrive between the bus and the classroom, between the bus and their cubby. But you'll also see them working directly with the students who have greater risk. So they'll be in small groups. They'll be one-on-one targeting students who could benefit from additional support. And additionally, they bring with them assessment and their training and assessment and their ability to collect the assessment and to work with the coach and the teachers to run the data-driven decision-making. So that's what happens in the pre-K. In the K-3, the resource takes a slightly different shape. It's a flexible resource that the schools can use across those grade levels, and they provide targeted evidence-based interventions to as many students as they can in during a day. And in addition, they do collect data for making data-driven decision-making about the students. So those are the differences between the programs, and you're familiar, this the same coaching model. So in Reading Core, there is a school-based, a school employee who's trained in the model. They support the tutor throughout the year. They're doing formal check-ins throughout the year to make sure the tutor is supported. And that same master coach supports, again, both the internal coach and the tutor. And now to share some of the results. A few years ago, actually just last year the results came out, the University of Chicago conducted an external and rigorous evaluation of the Reading Core, both of those branches, with a very simple question that they wanted to get at. And that was, is Reading Core the causal agent behind students' literacy skills improving? These foundational literacy skills, are they going up because of Reading Core? And so what I have showing here are the results for their pre-K evaluation, just using vocabulary as an example. So what they did is they took programs that had Reading Core, pre-K programs that had Reading Core, and then for all practical purposes, identical comparable programs that didn't. And they looked at how the students did throughout the year. And so what's shown here, the vocabulary skills of the students, is you can see at the beginning of the year, as would be expected, the students started the same.
But by the end of the year, the reading core is in orange, and you can see a significant and substantial improvement in their vocabulary skills, and we know how important vocabulary skills are, by the end of the school year. And another important detail is that that dashed line shows where we want students to be at the end of the year to be ready for K. So that's a level of vocabulary skills that are predictive of really good K readiness. And on average, the reading core students were reaching that, but the non-reading core students were not. This pattern held across all of our assessments. We have five assessments total, just using vocabulary to illustrate it, but we saw this and even more pronounced in some of our other data. But what the evaluators did in addition was they wanted to look and make sure that the program wasn't just effective overall, it was effective for certain subgroups. So you could imagine students who were English language learners or students who were not English language learners. And they looked at that, and across those types of subgroup analyses, they found that the program continued to be effective. So those same significant results were being found. But in some cases, actually, the students who were in the more what would be risk category, so in this example, the English language learners or dual language learners, as shown on the slide, were actually rising faster. And so we were in processing that with the actual evaluators. That's the ideal way of closing the achievement gap that I referenced earlier. So they were rising, but the students that were more at risk were rising faster. And that was something that we were absolutely delighted to see. They also conducted their evaluation in the K-3 program and found significant results up through third grade. I have kindergarten here to illustrate. And you can see the students start at the same place. This was a semester-long study, and this was so students who were in the comparison group could get access to Reading Core for the second half of the school year. And what you can see is that a pretty dramatic split occurred, where the students with Reading Core had much stronger letter sound skills is what was being measured here, actually ending at the semester mark where we want them to be at the end of the year on average. So again, we were delighted to see that. We're also very interested in understanding how this impacts, it provides value to the state of Minnesota. So what we have done is looked at the relationship of Reading Core to third grade proficiency, and we just have some examples that we wanted to share. As highlighted here. So, for example, in rural locations, using West Central and Nicollet schools, for example, over 70% of the students who reached proficiency in those fifth school districts had been served by Reading Core. We think that's a pretty strong association. In large districts outstate, we saw similar, although we can't serve as many students because the districts are larger and the student body is larger. For example, in Duluth and St. Paul, over 250 students, or 36% of all proficient students, had been served by Reading Core. We see that similar trend even in the urban districts. But one thing to note about the urban districts is that for the students who successfully completed Reading Core, they actually had a higher rate of proficiency than the overall performance of the district. And that's notable because we're only serving students who we know are at risk as for the data. And overall, obviously, includes students who were never at risk to begin with. So we're excited about those results. And this is, again, using that same kind of concept slide. What we're excited to see is students being rerouted back onto the path of successful reading skills so that they can reach third grade proficiency and have access to the greater likelihood of high school graduation and the outcomes that come along with that. Whereas if they didn't have that additional support, so the likelihood of getting back on that positive path is much less likely. But in addition to the student outcomes, we have done an analysis to see that it actually has some financial savings. This is showing that we did a comparison analysis for students who received Reading Core with comparable students who weren't able to receive Reading Core. And students who had received Reading Core were up to three times less likely to have been referred for or placed in special education. And that has profound impact for the student's education, of course, but it also has translations into financial savings because of the cost of evaluating students and providing them services in special education. I want to end with just highlighting a couple of the innovative projects we have going on in Reading Core. This work is driven by what we call an innovation pipeline.
where we recognize the need that's out there. We do an evidence-based review. We develop some programming, and then we put it through some iterations of implementing and evaluating. The first project is a vocabulary project where we're recognizing that students, these are the data that show that students, some students come with significantly smaller vocabularies when they arrive at school. And so what we're doing is we're developing an intervention to meet that word gap and to build that word gap. So that's occurring in pre-K, K, and 1, and we've identified a list of words that comprise 90% of the words students need to know in elementary school, and building that in the students. Another innovation that we're working on is called family child care, and the need here is about breadth. So we're recognizing that more students actually arrive in kindergarten having come from family child care centers than school-based or community pre-Ks. And we're thinking the program was successful in pre-K. We want to expand it to the licensed family child care centers and have the provider trained in the program and have a tutor to help them in their family child care locations. That is a two or three years into the into development, and we're really excited about that potential as well. And then lastly, our promise zones. The promise zones is about meeting the school needs where the schools have students who virtually every student in the school would need additional support. So this is occurring in the Northside Achievement Zone. We're partnered with the school and the Northside Achievement Zone to have a tutor in every single classroom and a dedicated math coach who's providing support both to the tutor and to the school. So we're really excited about how these innovations can continue to build on the success that we've seen in Reading Core and looking forward to expanding it.
Thank you. Welcome. If you'd please just state your name for the record, and we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Dunn, and I am a Reading Core internal coach at Eden Prairie Little Eagles Preschool. We have about 576 students, 350 who are four-year-olds and getting ready for kindergarten. 39% of our students are free and reduced lunch, and 56% are English language learners. 7 years ago, I was a volunteer in the preschool when Reading Core was first introduced to our building. They asked me to become a Reading Core tutor. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that this program works. I've seen the impact directly and what a difference it can make in students' lives. It's an incredible program. I served for 4 years as a tutor, which is a maximum you can serve as an AmeriCorps member, and I didn't really want to leave. At the end of my service, I was lucky enough to have the internal coach on-site position open up at my school. And because of the training that I received and the experience that I gained as a tutor, I was able to continue in the education field and was hired by our site as the internal coach. Right now, Reading Core tutors are in 4 of our 18 classrooms. All the teachers that I work with tell me the tools that Reading Core gives them makes them better teachers. In fact, one of our newest teachers, who's getting her master's, says that Reading Core has fine-tuned her teaching skills and added things that she wasn't even aware she was missing. So many of our teachers in our school are coming to me and saying, how do we do this? Can we get this in our classroom? Our administration has been so excited about the results that they're seeing in our Reading Core classrooms that they want to institute it across the board. In fact, last fall, we even held a training for all of our teachers to share some of these best practices, because if they could, they'd have it in every one of our classrooms. Teachers really appreciate the resources and support Reading Core provides. Everyone is stretched so thin. Teachers can't be everywhere, and Reading Core fills the gaps. It ensures that students can get the literacy pieces that they need each day. We create what is called a literacy-rich environment. From the moment that the children get off the bus to the moment that they're back on it, we're filling their day with literacy. We take advantage of every moment of their day. Walking from the bus, we're singing a rhyming song. When they get into the classroom, they sign in. They learn how to write their name, identify letters. We use alliteration games to excuse children when they go to snap, and so on throughout the day. And it doesn't stop there. Reading Core also provides books and activities that go home with the student each week so their families can support their learning too. This take-home book bag activity has been so well received by our families and our teachers that our school is looking for ways to expand it. Teachers see Reading Core making a difference in the classroom because the tutors can individualize the program to meet the unique needs of each student, especially those that are struggling. Every child is at a different level, and we work with them at their level. This is the best practice, and this is what we should be doing. As an example, I'll tell you a story of when I was a tutor. I was working with a little student named Anna, one of our English language learners. She was basically nonverbal. At the beginning of the school year, she had no self-confidence. She was very shy, quiet. But I worked with her using all of the Reading Core interventions, and slowly she came out of her shell. With the tools, training, and coaching that I received through Reading Core, I was able to meet her where she was, develop a relationship with her, and help support and scaffold her in her learning. The pride in her face when she was able to write her name for the first time and to say all the letters in her name was something that I will never forget. I began to see her progress, and I saw it in her scores, too. And I knew that she was on her way. She came back the next year to visit at the school, and she was talking like crazy. Her confidence was brimming over. It was amazing. I don't know that she would have gotten there if a Reading Core tutor hadn't been in her room. This is one example in one classroom, but this happens over and over again in Reading Core classrooms throughout our state. We know it works because the data is the cornerstone of what we do. We assess the children and review the data. It informs our decision making and helps us give the children what they need. In fact, at our site, we just completed our winter benchmark and reviewed the data for all of our students, and the growth that we're already seeing is amazing. The kids are on the path and getting ready for kindergarten. In fact, we've had kindergarten teachers in our district tell us that they notice the kids that come out of our Reading Core classrooms. It's not only the families of our students that benefit from this program. My family, too, has benefited. My daughter is also a Reading Core tutor and has been for 3 years. She is a graduate student at Hamline getting her master's in education with an ESL component, and I am very proud of her. Her service with Reading Core helped her to decide on her graduate path, and the education award that she receives each year is helping to fund that education. As you can see, I am incredibly passionate about Reading Core and early childhood education. I love working with these kids. I love knowing that the work that I do is making a difference in their lives, in their lives of their families, and in our communities. I have seen firsthand how well this program works and what your investment in this program does. It is affecting the lives of children and putting them on track for success. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Sugar.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Audrey Sucker and serve as CEO of Serve Minnesota. I know we're running short of time, so I'm going to just conclude our testimony by pointing out that with the strong outcomes for students that you've been hearing about in this testimony, the decrease in special education referrals that are a result of our work, and then our focus on continual innovation, we're not surprised to be in a situation where the demand for tutors has exceeded our capacity. We're in the application process right now and have requests for more than 1,600 tutors across all of Minnesota. So House File 646 would allow us to meet much more of this demand. We really appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you to testify and ask your support for this bill, and I'm happy to take any of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have a couple of questions. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Dr. Parker. Big fan of both Reading Core and Math Core, great interventions. I noticed in your presentation on Reading Core here that you're backing up to pre-K, even into child care. Why not do the same with Math Core, which doesn't start until fourth grade, and yet, as I understand it, I don't have a PhD after my name, you do. I think of the Boston preschool model, which as I understand it, is based on some fairly new cognitive research that says kids, when done developmentally appropriately, can actually grasp mathematical and algebraic concepts better than we ever thought, and that shows up on increased achievement in third grade on those tests in math and in reading. So why wait math core till fourth grade while you're starting reading core actually now looking back into preschool?
Dr. Parker.
Madam Chair, Representative Daffin, thank you so much for the question. And we are absolutely interested in building out the math core down to pre-K. But I also want to note that our pre-K work over the last year has built into the literacy-rich environment a literacy and math-rich environment. And that's because some of this research shows that you can essentially take advantage of natural opportunities to build number sense, some of the early numeracy concepts, in the same way you take advantage of opportunities to build language and literacy. So our pre-K program is doing that right now, but we want to build a connection from our fourth grade math core program down to our pre-K and do, I think, just exactly what you're saying.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Good,
really good question, by the way. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm just, this is my first time on education finance, so I'm really enjoying hearing about your program. How do you go about recruiting people for your tutors?
Ms. Zucker.
Madam Chair, Representative, we recruit tutors by spreading the word. A lot of the way that we recruit is by word of mouth. As we just heard Kathy talk about, she was actually in the school and was aware of the reading course, so she stepped up. A lot of our tutors actually are parents that are volunteering in the school and then see an opportunity to actually be an AmeriCorps member and be in the same school that their children are. We recruit heavily from colleges because a lot of college students want a year between their bachelor's degree and their next step, and it's a very magnificent way for them to solidify their career goals. So multiple ways that we go at it, but those are two really strong avenues from the community where people are already in the schools and then college students that are looking for a way to give back.
Representative Scott.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I know earlier, I think in the math presentation, you mentioned even seniors, the silver tsunami is upon us, and I know our former demographer for the state, Mr. Gillespie, said that we've got a great resource there to tap into. If we can get these people involved, especially in a classroom, I think that's a really great opportunity. So maybe go to some senior citizen centers or something. But and the other question is, how long does the training take for someone to become a tutor?
Ms. Zucker.
Yeah, Madam Chair, committee members. I would say, actually, in terms of your idea about the tsunami of retirees, that's really good advice. And in the reading corps, a third of our tutors actually are baby boomers. I think we have some tutors that are, we already have somebody in their 80s, so that is really good advice. And in terms of the training, I'll ask Dr. Parker to talk about the training.
Dr. Parker.
Madam Chair, representatives. The training initially begins with a 4 full-day, what we call institute, that our author mentioned being able to see, and that's where they get initial exposure and training to their skills. There are other trainings that occur intermittently throughout the year, for example, cultural and linguistic sensitivity and self-awareness training. All of our tutors go through that kind of training. But then I want to just reemphasize that ongoing coaching model is what we consider part of our training as well. By getting feedback live as they're doing what they're supposed to be doing throughout the year, that's part of their training, and that's what helps them to be successful.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions? Is there anyone else who wished to testify in this? All right, Mr. Heller, very briefly, because we have one more bill to get through also today. And please just state your name for the record.
Thank you. Education Finance Committee, Ms. Lewin and members. My name is Rick Heller, unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional and Put Disabled. I've been listening for some time now with the people that the Minnesota Reading Corps, but I haven't heard them say anything about the rules of spelling. And if it's okay with the chair, the question really is, you yield the individual next to me here. I don't see any data on how they implement the rules of spelling as it relates to a student that can read well or proficient at third grade.
Thank you. Mr. Heller, I'm going to suggest that you talk to them offline if you want to ask some questions of them.
I appreciate that, but I'm not here for therapy. I'm just here to look at my, I have a great story to share in the future, but I can tell you a lot that if you don't allow the question to be asked, the public won't know. Thank you for this time to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. And with that, I don't know if you wish to comment on spelling at all, Ms. Dr. Parker.
Representative Loon, committee, actually happy to answer the question. This is an opportunity for us to spotlight another innovation that we're working on. There is research that recognizes the reciprocal relationship between writing skills, such as spelling and reading. And one of the innovations that we haven't highlighted is something called word construction, where students are actually explicitly engaged in building spelling. And we really think there might be some promise there, particularly for students who are just learning to put together phonics skills into connected text, making that jump from some of the early literacy skills to reading as it looks.
Thank you. All right. With that, Representative Erickson.
Just a comment, Madam Chair, and to piggyback off to Dr. Parker's last comment, the reading standards for our children at the K-3 level really do, a kindergarten teacher begins to teach exactly what you're talking about. So there's a relationship between what the child writes and the knowing what the letter is and then associating the sound and leading that to spelling. So I see that as a great improvement over the way we might have learned to spell. So the children see a better connection, and I think in the brain they can make that transfer more easily today than they used to. So I think there's encouragement for Mr. Heller's concern.
Thank you. All right, Representative Bennett, any final comments?
All right, well, Madam Chair and Committee, thank you so much for hearing about this great program. I'm excited about it. You know, one of the things that I see is the fidelity that's involved in the protocols that you all use to maintain that fidelity from year to year and from site to site is part of the strength of this program. And I'm excited to push it out into more schools, and so sure would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'm glad very much to have your testimony. And Ms. Dunn, I think you were there when I came and toured, and you were getting close to your end of your service time. I'm so glad they found a way to keep you at the school. So it was still a memorable day. I couldn't sing the S consonant song for all of you, but I won't. That I learned in reading court 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, so it was great. So with that, House File 646 is laid over for possible inclusion for an omnibus bill. Thank you very much. And all right, Representative Mariani, House File 832.
Chair, I know we're running out of time, so I'll move that House File 832 be... it's a motion laid over.
We're laid over for possible inclusion, yes. And with that, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have a author's amendment, 832A1.
That's right. So it's just a technical author's amendment. And with that, why don't we'll just go ahead and adopt that to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Any questions for Representative Mariani and his amendment? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of what is the...
A1.
The A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Mariani, to your bill.
As amended. Chair members, I'll be very quick. It's actually a pretty simple concept. The college level for entrance placement or CLEP is actually currently in statute. Up to 2009, we were providing reimbursements or funding for school districts to administer this for college credit examination. And so the proposal before you is to continue to, or to once again make appropriations to reimburse schools and students to be able to participate in the test. These are college accreditation opportunities for students. It's really about the post-secondary, secondary overlap, opening up opportunities for students. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm just going to stop. I'm going to ask John Peterson and Dan Messick from St. Paul Schools to briefly share their experience with the use of PrEP and their desire for us to be able to work with that school district and other school districts to offer opportunity for students around the state.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, please just state your name before you provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Mariani, thank you very much. My name is John Peterson. I am the Executive Director for the Office of College and Career Readiness in St. Paul Public Schools, Capital City for the state of Minnesota. Our job is to prepare every single student in our school district of about 38,000 students for college and career. And when we talk about college and career, we talk about success. We also talk about being great and moving beyond college and career to becoming great citizens of this wonderful state of Minnesota. CLEP situates itself as a key strategy within our early college model or early college system, in which we're preparing students for college and career through a variety of strategies that include career, technical education, advanced placement, international baccalaureate, concurrent enrollment, college in the schools, and of course CLEP, which we're here to talk about today. One of the reasons why I like CLEP is because it's a relatively low-risk, high-reward proposition, both from a time and from a financial perspective. The test only costs about $75 to take, and the administration of it is less than $25. It's relatively easy to find someone to proctor the examination, and I think that even at a Midland rate of 50% completion and successful passing of the test results for the student and the family significant dividends in terms of the dollars saved on the college credits that are earned. Minnesota State is required by statute to recognize and align to the credits that are earned through the CLEP examination. A second reason why I like CLEP is because it successfully accesses students' a priori knowledge and or prior learning. It's a prior learning assessment. And because we have so many folks coming in from out of the Twin Cities region who may speak English as a second language or are a multilingual learner, it provides opportunities for our new-to-country and immigrant students to basically demonstrate that through some non-formal schooling processes, there's knowledge, there's skills that can be recognized by the assessment. And so given its low cost, relative high reward proposition, and then the fact that it awards students for bringing in prior learning, I think it is a pretty solid strategy to include within an early college model and system for preparing our students for college and or career. And we know that in the 7-county metro area over the next 25 years, the working age population will, it's currently 22% of color or multilingual, and that will more than double in 25 years by 2040, 2045. And so we really have to be thinking about how we can accelerate our students toward college and or career. So I'll turn it over to Principal on Special Assignment, Mr. Dan Miesick, to talk a little bit more about CLEP and early college.
Hi, Madam Chair, Representatives, I'm Dan Miesick. I'm with St. Paul Public Schools. You received this. It just got passed out. It lists all the opportunities to get college credit while you're in St. Paul Public Schools. The two that were not, that John did not mention, Project Lead the Way and PSEO, are all part of our early college program. The biggest thing that our early college work is talking about is helping students in the middle. There's a lot of students that are going to succeed in college that have the support at home, all the work that they need. They're doing well, and they're going to continue to do well. But what we're talking about is helping students in the middle, helping change their trajectory. One of the things that early college, and in this case CLEP, will do is help students understand that they have the ability to succeed in college. If they get college credit before they go to college, they obviously learn that, hey, I can be successful in college, and that's awesome. The advantages of the CLEP test is that it gives opportunities for students in non-AP classes to test out of a college class. The example that we tried out last year on a very preliminary basis was pre-calculus. There isn't an AP class in that or an AP test in that. So we had 25 students take the pre-calculus club test. Of those 25 students, half of them, 12 of them, passed it. We started the prep for that 4 weeks before the actual test. So I'm not worried that only half of the students succeeded. This year we started the prep for it back in September, so I'm sure we're going to have better success and we're going to have more numbers doing that. We worked with all our pre-calculus teachers, we're doing that. Of the 12 students that passed, 62-thirds of them, 66 2/3%, were students of color. Another advantage is it gives opportunities for kids in the middle to earn college credit. A lot of our opportunities are things that already exist that for our top kids. Our goal is to bring it to kids in the middle. I think another advantage is students in smaller schools and smaller districts, not in St. Paul, will have the opportunity to get college credit before they go just by taking an exam. Their teachers have to work towards it, but it will help them. And teachers in any spot in Minnesota can help their kids by allowing them to take the club exam. Two examples that we have in St. Paul, in 2013 at Agape, our high school for new mothers, there were 11 students who took a Spanish test, the Spanish club test, 10 of them got up to 12 credits of college Spanish for taking that test. These were students with a Latino Hispanic background and their native language Spanish. I think that's very powerful to recognize the value of knowing another language along with knowing English. It rewards students for that. And then the other one is the pre-calc test that we tried last year. I think it's a great opportunity for our students, and we are going to continue to push it, but it's going to become financially more difficult for us. So I think we need to kind of, the funding that was attached to AP and IV testing, I think will really help the CLEP testing, and I think it will help all our students. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? I had a question. So is St. Paul Schools the only one who's doing this, or are there other schools using the CLEP test? And whoever wants to take that one.
I believe there were, and this would have been a few sessions ago, over 100 schools that had been accessing the CLEP exam. I think, I couldn't say for sure, but I would guess that the majority of them are rural school districts where they have a little bit more difficulty in finding licensed teachers to teach concurrent enrollment and or college in the schools. I believe the number is 133, if I'm not mistaken, but that's what I'm thinking.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, sorry.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, you will perhaps recognize this line of questioning, or hopefully question, from earlier in the session, but what I see missing from this package of tests and programs is Project Lead the Way, which I recognize doesn't charge an exam fee. It has been my family's experience with the program, but in order to receive the college credit, if you pass the exam, you then have to pay my experience is deeply subsidized rate for those credits. And I'm just wondering, and I'm not sure who I'm asking, whether it's Representative Mariani or I think the guy on my right, your left, why not put them in there, particularly after our presentation on Math Corps and the needs there? Oh,
page 5 on the bottom.
Page 5.
Lead the Way, it's there.
But, are we funding that opportunity for students?
Yes.
Mr. Misek.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representatives. Yes, we have it at several of our schools. Some schools, Johnson High School, has an engineering pathway that's extensively using Project Lead the Way. All of our high schools have at least one Project Lead the Way class.
Representative Dabney.
So, I'm not sure who I'm asking. I think they're here asking for more money for college testing that leads to, at least in AP, maybe you'll get college credit, and dual enrollment, you will get college credit. maybe I'm just too confused, and I'll let it go. I'm trying to see if there's a distinction between offering the course, and then we cover the costs of some testing, and offering the course and not covering that. Is there a distinction here in how Project Lead the Way is handled versus these other programs? I hope I'm being clear.
I can't specifically address Project Lead the Way. I know that we do the testing in that. I know that we offer the courses in that. I don't know how much we link them together. Mm-hmm. What we're asking right now is about the CLEP testing, though. And the CLEP testing, for example, we already offer pre-calculus classes to over 200 St. Paul students. Right now, last year, for the first time, 25 students took the pre-calculus CLEP test. And so we want to offer that to more students, and we want to go to other subject areas, too, whether it's Spanish, whether it's macroeconomics, whether it's U.S. government, trying to find places that we're already teaching the coursework that can qualify students for college credit.
Thank you. I'm done.
Okay. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If people just want to get the information, that's fine because of the time. So this money goes to the schools? So the student is reimbursed, but the school is reimbursed? Is that right?
I'm going to direct that to either Representative Mariani or Mr. Peterson.
My understanding, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that the funds that would be supporting CLEP examinations would come to the school district and that they would cover the costs for students to take the examination who otherwise might not have the capacity to be able to pay for the examination themselves. That's my understanding.
Representative.
And Madam Chair, that was my question, because the way the language is, it would be for every student, including my kids, and I can certainly afford to pay the cost of this. So but maybe the districts have policies in place that would limit it, and if that's the case, should we write the legislation that way? I guess that's kind of where my question is going.
So I'll direct that to perhaps to the authors. Representative Mariani, is that something you're interested in? Or Mr. Strong, did you have?
Madam Chair, just very quickly, in the language in Representative Mariani's bill, you can see at the bottom of the first page there, it talks about the program reimbursing a student for up to 6 examination fees, and then says that the commissioner must give priority to the fees of students from low-income families. So presuming that there's not sufficient resources in whatever appropriation were to fill in the blank, then those fees would be prioritized to the low-income students at each of the schools.
Representative,
I guess that's my question, is I think that's something, I'm not sure the language is tight enough on that in that regard, I guess. We don't need to do
anymore. Madam Chair, I'll work with Representative Thiessen on how the funding used to work to make sure that we're clear on the direction that this goes.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Mariani?
Chair, I was only going to add that I'm certainly open for that kind of work. And we obviously have a track record from years ago when we used to fund this. It would be interesting to take a look at, informative to take a look at what the pattern was of those 135 high schools at that time, and what the distribution that might instruct us on the need for tighter language.
Right, and this could be a topic that we return to when we talk about some of the other classes that we have with, you know, such as AP. I think, Mr. Strong, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe similar to how we do AP. We provide money to schools to buy down the cost of the test for all students, but low-income students pay nothing for it, and students that are not low income may pay something, less than the full cost, but pay something. Other questions? I know we're running late on time. Representative Mariani, thank you so much. I'm sorry we're a little short, but we'll resume discussion of this another time. Representative Murphy?
I have a quick technical question.
Yes.
Did we drop on line 2.7, did we drop the word aid also?
Representative Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, I think the amendment works okay. It would replace the drafting mistake I made when I copied this from elsewhere, and so the new language would read college level examination program aid. So it's the aid for the program. So the aid remains in the head note.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Mariani?
you very much, Sarah, for being here.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. So with that, we will lay House File 832 as amended over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate you being here. And with that, committee is adjourned.